I'll call the meeting to order. We're missing a quorum, but we'll start as a committee and then under quorum as we get different numbers. Okay, today we're going to be hearing from the Department of Health, presenting the governor's budget recommendations. And so I'd like to welcome Craig, Chief Finance Officer, and Patricia Adams, I believe, and whoever else is coming. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to come and present the governor's budget recommendations on the Minnesota, Department of Health. I'm Craig Aiken. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the agency. With me today is Pat Adams. She's the Assistant Commissioner at the department. Madam Chair, since we didn't have an opportunity to do a base budget review, and I know there's a number of members who are new to the committee, I'm wondering if I could have your indulgence for a few minutes to just go through a quick review of the department's budget.
That would be excellent.
Great. Thank you.
I believe if people have the budget book, too.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, I want to take a few minutes to kind of go over the Department of Health budget before we talk about the changes that the governor is recommending in the next biennium. We operate off of about $1 billion in our biennial budget. As you can see from this slide, the largest majority of that is federal funds, which we are able to draw down from the federal government on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota. The next largest part is our MERC funds, which is medical education and research costs. Approximately $183 million is transferred from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Health, which then we transfer out to hospitals and other teaching institutions to support doctor education across the state. Only about 14% of our funding is from the general fund. The remaining amounts come from the SGSR fund, which is the state government special revenue account. That is our fee programs. The healthcare access fund, which is $75 million, that is a tax paid by providers, used largely to support healthcare programs. And the miscellaneous special revenue fund, which is the MSR fund, which represents 9%, which is a blended fund of federal and state dollars, which we use to operate a number of programs, most notably our case mix and long-term care compliance and nursing home inspection program. And so where does all this money go? About two-thirds goes right out of the department. We provide grants to local governments, tribes, community-based organizations. Only about 36% is kept at the department to manage our activities, which include monitoring, regulation, and oversight programs. We divide the department up into four program areas, the largest of which is community and family health promotion, for 48% or $491 million for every 2 years goes to that. The second is policy, quality, and compliance, which is 28% of our budget. Health protection, which includes infectious disease, the labs, emergency preparedness, is 17%, and administrative support services. Our budget is divided among two House committees, and so this committee's jurisdiction is everything on this slide except for the policy, quality, and compliance piece, which is under the jurisdiction of Representative Huntley's committee. The general fund, or 14% of our program, which is certainly the piece most germane to our discussions today, is divided out into these slices. 63% of our general fund budget goes to community and family health promotion.
Okay, Representative Hollis, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. On your second slide, where our funding goes, Madam Chair, could they give us a breakdown maybe next time they come back or send you a letter? I'd like a breakdown on the local governments, tribal governments, and community-based organizations. I want to know what goes to cities, what goes to counties, what goes to a community-based organization, or what goes to a tribal government.
Madam Chair, Representative Howell, we'd be happy to provide that detail.
Okay. I'm mistaken. Are we going to get some of that?
And some of that will
today, won't we? Get?
We will.
Okay.
So we focus on the three program areas, which are under the jurisdiction of this committee. The community and family health promotion. You can see that $321 million, or 65% of the funding for that program area, comes from the federal funds. The largest of this grant is the Women, Infants, and Children Program, or the WIC program, which amounts to $262 million of the $321 million. Federal funds also provide nutritional information and supplemental foods, promote family health and self-sufficiency, services to low-income, high-risk mothers and children, pre-pregnancy canceling, planning, and cancer screening. You can also see the small amount of the federal TANF money goes to this program area, as well as about $89 million in general fund, a small amount of fees, and the healthcare access fund, which also is not under the jurisdiction of this committee, but is included for discussion purposes because it's in the program area overseen by this committee. You can see $50 million, largest chunk of which is $47 million planned in the next biennium for the statewide health improvement program, part of the health reform initiative passed last year. In terms of grants, though, for this area, 86% of the money flows out of the program area to partners, the largest of being the WIC program, and also the largest general fund grant program is the Local Public Health Act, funding at $43.7 million. The second program area is the health protection area. You can see that the funding for this area is largely federal funds as well, about half federal funds. The federal funds include grants for emergency and hospital preparedness, immunizations and vaccines for children, AIDS, HIV, STD surveillance and prevention, emerging infections, drinking water protection, various lead protection reduction programs, and several other grant programs. We also provide, or we also have funding in this area from the general fund and from the fees, which amounts to 32%, which I'll provide more detail on.
Representative Stevenson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to this point, just a quick question on the federal dollars. Obviously, there's a large influx of federal dollars. Are there MOEs or strings that are attached to this as far as state expenditures go to capture those dollars on a 2-to-1 or any kind of ratio?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, that's a good question. In essence, we have maintenance of effort requirements or match requirements on about $190 million worth of federal funds. We provide $26 million of direct state resources to match those amounts on behalf of Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, committee members, in terms of our fee programs for health protection, you can see that we collect about $59 million over the 2 years in fees. These are direct costs associated with the programs that we operate. The largest pieces are drinking water protection, which obviously does source water and drinking water protection across the state, newborn screening, which is assures that Minnesota babies are screened for 54 rare heritable and congenital disorders and receive follow-up services. Our food, beverage, and lodging certification, which provides oversight of eating establishments and hospitality institutions, and certifies managers of food establishments. Our well management program, which protects drinking water as well and groundwater by assuring that wells are and borings are properly site constructed and sealed. Our X-ray, pool safety, radioactive, lab accreditation, and asbestos abatement programs are additional programs in this area. And finally, the last area that I would cover today would be our administrative support services. You can see that approximately $68 million is spent to provide shared services within the department. $49 million are drawn down from federal funds and put into an account, a revolving indirect fund account, to pay for most of that cost. $18 million is for from the general fund. You can see in terms of that $18 million for the general fund, most of that is for building rent, which houses our staff both here and across the state. $2 million for the executive office.
I think I have a question. You said the revolving fund was related to the federal dollars? Is that what did you say?
I'm sorry.
Revolving fund? What, can you describe what revolving fund you were describing, talking about?
The MSR, or Miscellaneous Special Revenue Fund, in this slide, represents a portion that we negotiate with the federal government to use from our federal grants for shared services, administrative support services in the department. And we take that money from each grant, pool it into a fund, and use it to pay for those costs.
Okay, so when you said revolving fund, you don't mean it goes out and comes back. It covers staff costs.
Exactly.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Raycombe, what does SGSR stand for, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, it stands for the State Government Special Revenue Fund. It's a special fund set up in the state treasury meant to collect fees from different agencies, primarily from the Department of Health, that is then used to support those fee programs for the purposes of which they're appropriate.
A follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Acomb. So what we see on the slide, the SGSR fee programs, those are revenues that are generated from the different programs that are then put into a revolving fund that then goes out, or can you explain a little bit of the circulation of those monies, if you would?
Certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson. In this slide, basically we charge a fee for each of these program areas. The fee is set based on a four-year cycle of what we expect the revenues to be from generating that fee and what the cost of the program would be. These are basically break-even propositions over 4 years. When we talk about fee-related proposals, we're talking about a cost that would go into this pool, which would then be pulled back out to cover the cost of the regulatory oversight activities the department has in those areas. And so while it all goes into a central state fund, it is appropriated back out for each of these program areas, which we then use to administer the program.
Just one follow-up, Madam Chair. And so the goal on these programs would be that they are revenue neutral after a four-year cycle. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, that's the goal.
Representative Butler. Madam Chair, and I'll just give you an example. If you look up at the food and beverage lodging, every restaurant has to have a license. And the Department of Health or in some cases the counties go and inspect it periodically, and then there's a license fee, and that's what goes into the SGSR.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Taylor, excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Acomb, I just would like you to explain a little bit more how you interface with the PFA with regard to drinking water and well management. I understand they're not a subset of your division, but rather of Department of Health. But how do you work with them out of the monies that their program has tie in with yours and Minnesota Rural Water, which is still something different? But I'd like to know more about that, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Taylor, that's a good question. We work cooperatively on drinking water and source water protection with a number of agencies, including the PFA. The PFA's money is largely for capital improvements to cities and municipalities. For example, if they want to build a drinking water facility or a wastewater facility, they'll often draw down a loan from the PFA for that purpose. In terms of the planning that goes into that, the source water protection activities, the monitoring and delimiting of the wellhead source area, those are activities that are done in the Department of Health, largely with federal funds.
Any other questions? Comments? Okay. Let you go. Forward right. Then.
Madam Chair, members, with that background, I would like to move on to the governor's budget recommendations, which would be change items from this budget. As the governor mentioned last week when he presented his budget recommendations, these are challenging times that we are facing, and certainly perhaps even unprecedented times here in Minnesota. And as this committee remembers 2 years ago, as the governor pointed out, we enacted a budget bill of about $34.6 billion. And this year we're looking at revenue for the next 2 years of only $31.9 billion, a dramatic drop. The economy then was growing at 2.1%, and the economy is expected to shrink now by 2.5%. And 51,000 less Minnesotans are working than were 2 years ago. The governor's recommendations as it relates to the Department of Health reflect hard choices in the face of that economic reality. And while all of these programs are important, we felt an obligation to make sure that our department's core mission and core programs were both protected in the long term as well as the short term in light of this economic situation. And so the governor has submitted these recommendations in light of that. The commissioner sends her regrets that she wasn't able to be here herself today, but I'd like to read to you from her letter, her transmittal letter to the legislature. As you're aware, Minnesota consistently ranks in the top four as one of the healthiest states in the nation, thanks to our commitment to public health and the strength of our unique state and local partnerships. MDH employs a variety of program models and strategies in the pursuit of our mission, to protect, maintain, and improve the health of all Minnesotans. Additionally, our policies reduce overall costs by focusing on immediate interventions and long-term prevention. We approach this work through core agency values of integrity, collaboration, science, and accountability. Also important are our close partnerships with local public health departments, tribal governments, the federal government, other state agencies, and many health-related organizations. MDH faces a variety of new concerns in the coming biennium. These include increasing demand for services with decreasing financial resources, growing public concern about a new emerging health threat, and maintaining our focus on long-term prevention and reform goals in the midst of immediate short-term needs. The following pages reflect the difficult economic times facing the state in the coming biennium and contain strategies MDH believes will address the fiscal realities facing our agency while still accomplishing our goals. These strategies support our recently refocused agency strategic priorities: healthcare reform, focus on prevention risk factors, and public health threats. There are three strategic themes to incorporate across our strategic priorities: eliminate health disparities, align with and influence the changing culture, and use economic conditions for health's advantage. We establish improved goals and performance measures to accompany these priorities and themes to ensure our progress toward a cost-effective outcome for all Minnesotans. MDH is committed to finding new and innovative ways to accomplish our mission, and we look forward to working with you on our 10-11 biennial budget so that Minnesotans can continue to live in one of the healthiest states in the nation.
Ms. Jacob, it's a very interesting letter. I just wanted to ask you the meaning, maybe one phrase if you can.
Sure.
In the paragraph where she says the three strategic themes, and she talks about eliminating health disparities, which I know is a priority with the commissioner. The next one, align with and influence the changing culture. What is that referring to? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I believe that what that is talking about is that Minnesota's demographics are changing over time. And certainly, the reality of our population and the needs of our population are changing as we move into the future, and we want to be prepared and aligned to meet the needs that will come with that.
Great. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, committee members.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Acomb, as we look through this, the fees on the SGSR, we see some significant boosts in this, in terms of what some of the institutions which were not paying previously, and I may be getting this wrong, but then on the third page, looking at food and beverage lodging establishments with seasonal permanent food stand, previously zero fee, now going to a proposed fee of $250. And I guess my question is, when we talked about the SGSR, it was revenue neutral in that we were anticipating that the needs of these institutions was going to be set out over a four-year period, and that those revenues would be pushed back into the system in terms of people going out to inspect these sites, so that the, you know, obviously the $59 million that we have accrued in this account is the $59 million that covers the inspection and the enforcement of these particular programs. But when I see the fees jumping like this, I got to ask the question, is what kind of revenue increase are we looking at here? And in a contracting economy, how do we justify increasing the fees on an already overburdened industry?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, there are a number of fee requests in this, in the governor's proposal, which I'll cover individually, including this one about food, beverage, and lodging. There's a variety of reasons for the fee increases. One is that the costs have been going up and the fees have not been changed in some time. The second is that there may be activities which we did not have sufficient resources to meet our statutory requirements in terms of inspection and oversight. And the third is that there's new activities proposed in the governor's budget for additional oversight and regulation, which these fees reflect.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, just take us through the changes.
Sure. Madam Chair, committee members, if you could turn to page C-11 of your packets. There are a number of critical investments that the governor includes in his budget. The one germane to this committee is an increase in our tuberculosis prevention and control funding. The governor recommends $200,000 annually from the general fund to increase funding for TB, mostly testing in our lab, to address the critical need for laboratory testing, treatment, and prevention within Minnesota communities. This is an item that has gotten recent attention with outbreaks in Nobles Rock County and, again, here in Ramsey County in the workhouse. TB is becoming an emerging health threat in Minnesota, as it is elsewhere, and the governor is recommending a minimal investment to shore up our detection and treatment and response capacity here in the state. If you could turn the page to 13. Well, the funding for the next recommendation the governor has, he recommends a change in our health reform package that was passed this last session. While this particular item is not funded from the jurisdiction of this committee, this activity falls within the program areas overseen by this committee, and so it's included here. Basically, this pertains to the statewide health improvement program passed last session. The governor and the legislature agreed on $47 million to be spent to reduce obesity and tobacco use across the state in a pilot nation-leading program. Because of the current economic situation, the governor is recommending reducing that amount to $24 million and spreading it over 4 years, which would result in $6 million per year of funding for this activity.
Mr. Continue, we're all kind of sighing over this. Can you tell us how many people are not going to be served as a result of this change?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and Representatives, with the full funding, we had intended to be pretty much statewide so that every corner of the state would have grants that they could work on obesity prevention and tobacco use and exposure prevention. The recommended budget reflects about 25% of that amount, and so we are expecting, you know, of course we can't cover the same scope of the state, but we do expect to find and fund projects that are in corners of the state so that we can see changes that happen over time. But we will not be able to have the full scope of coverage.
Okay, so 75% reduction, what does that translate into people?
Well, Madam Chair, we didn't build this program on a number of people served as much as a geographic scope of services. And so I don't know that we could quantify the number of people reduced.
And I just to quantify your statement as well, we're actually looking at a 50% and a 75% reduction. But we're spreading the program out over 4 years rather than two, which we actually think will be a benefit to establishing these long-term systems changes that are needed for this to be an ongoing effort in the state.
Ms. Adams, maybe I misunderstood you. I thought you said there'd be 25% left.
That was, Madam Chair, that was me who said that. And actually, it's per year. We're going to have about $6,000 per year as opposed to $20,000. So it's really more of about a third of the amount of money in a single year that grantees will be able to use. But it is a 50% reduction overall that's spread over 4 years rather than 2 years.
Well, I find it hard to believe that you haven't projected some numbers of people that you were planning to serve when you originally put this together. So that's what I'm asking.
Madam Chair, we are in the process of releasing the request for proposals that will go out to all community health boards and tribes. And so we don't know yet how many proposals we'll be getting in, but we're expecting that we'll be able to fund anywhere from 8 to 13 projects. And so depending on the projects that are selected and the location, geographic location of those projects, that will determine the number of population that can serve.
And just one sort of question about that. Are you saying that there will be certain areas that you will be focusing on, or you're just going to see who applies and then there will be some criteria? It would be interesting to know what your criteria is for where you will be focusing these programs.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we do have criteria that are developed, and one is geographic representation. Another one is hard-to-reach special needs populations, and there are other criteria that are being used as well. So we do, in order to have the greatest impact in our state, it's very important that we target the greatest need populations.
Okay. Representative Huntley?
Madam Chair, Mr. Acuff and Commissioner Adams have already heard my comments on this, but for just to explain to some of you members that are not on the Health and Human Service Finance Committee, this program was based on a model program that was funded entirely by the CDC and located in four different communities. Each community decided what was the big need in their community, so they were all different. And that was Rochester, Hamilton, Ramsey, and Wilmer counties, or whatever the county is that Wilmer's in. And they were very successful, and they had good outcomes. The CDC was very interested in this. And so when we attempted to move this program statewide in the last year's health reform bill, this was a recommendation that we spend the $47 million over a two-year period by the governor's healthcare transformation task force. And so they recommended that to the governor. The governor did support that last year. And he is now trying to reduce the amount of money that we're spending. About half of the money that we could save in healthcare in that Transformation Task Force report came from public health activities, not from changing the healthcare system. And if we're ever going to get a grip on healthcare spending, maybe we ought to keep going after it. I don't think we can wait. What the governor's proposal is to wait and hold off these expenses, cut them way down, and not try to get a grip on healthcare spending. So hopefully this part of governor's budget will not prevail.
Mr. Huntley, I think that interesting percentage, 50% of the savings are from the public health expenditures from programs such as these that you're commenting, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that came to, in a scale down in the original Transformation Task Force proposal, there would have been about 20% savings in healthcare spending, and about half of that came from public health activities. In the scale down bill, we got about 12% potential savings, so 6% are from public health activities.
Mayor, I'd just like to ask our witnesses, how are we going to make up that, it's going to come out of one side, but it's going to rise in the other, right? We're going to have more health care problems. 50% of the savings would be lost if we adopted this. Have you been thinking about how your department might need to deal with that?
Madam Chair, we have been working over the last few months to develop a menu of interventions that are based, that are evidence-based. And there is a lot of enthusiasm about those interventions. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that even those areas that may not receive funding may be able to find one of those interventions that they might be able to incorporate into their current practices, which may have an impact. Granted, it will not be a statewide impact. It will be more localized. But it is a resource that will be available not only to local jurisdictions, but also to nonprofit and private organizations.
Are you talking about a new intervention that's not existing now? Is that something we're going to hear about, or are you talking about something that is there currently? I'm not following you.
Okay. We developed, as grantees are submitting proposals, they have to base those proposals on a menu of interventions that we provide to them that we have researched and that we know are evidence-based, because we really believe that if we're to have the greatest impact, we need to use proven strategies. And so those strategies have been proven either in Minnesota or nationally to be very effective in addressing a particular problem, such as obesity reduction, increase in physical activity, tobacco prevention. So there's a menu of 20-some interventions that local areas can choose from based on how ready they are to implement some of those interventions.
Okay, but if I understand you correctly, you're going to have half as much money to spend for these interventions. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a, I mean, you may have some ideas about what you'd like to do, but you're going to have half of what we were expecting we had to spend on this. And so you're going to, without the interventions, we're going to see the cost rise because we're losing 50% of the savings, as we were just discussing. So I'm trying to understand where your hopefulness comes from in terms of this being helpful, because all of those interventions funded. Maybe you could give us an example of something concrete. Maybe that would help.
Madam Chair, just to refocus the conversation, the state is facing a nearly $5 billion deficit in the coming 2 years. The February forecast is likely to worsen that number. I don't think that it would have been anybody's choice to reduce this program, but in light of the economic realities facing us, it was important to make cuts here and across all of state government in order to balance the budget. Certainly, we would prefer to have full funding for this program. We're frankly thrilled that it's still here at this level in light of the economic situation the state finds itself in. And, you know, I think that we will do the best as an agency that we can do with the resources that we have available to continue our efforts to help promote and prevent chronic diseases here in Minnesota for all citizens.
Stevenson, then Huntley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to Representative Huntley's point, I know that the four pilot programs that were on the Transformation Task Force, we're kind of getting it, because we don't sit on the full Health and Human Services, we're kind of getting an overview of this. But I think the perspective savings on this, you know, we don't have the ability to see what the process was or what those potential savings are in terms of how a program is going to be implemented. So we're kind of in the blind on this one. And my hopes are, you know, that if this is one of the things that this committee is going to have an influence on, that we would be able to get that presentation of the Transformation Task Force savings and the effective programs that are really going to save the dollars that we're talking about here in front of us, so we can make an educated choice. And so I guess I would go to Mr. Acom's issue is, we got a $5 billion budget shortfall here, and we're going to have to start taking some hard choices. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, this is one of those programs that is effective, but we're going to have to become very creative in how we approach this budget deficit. And I think this is one of the alternatives, unless there's some hardcore evidence that this Transformation Task Force can bring forward, that we are going to save more than we're going to pay out. Just a comment, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, just a couple of other points. One, last week I got a call from the CDC interviewing me by a reporter because they're so excited about the program that we had planned prior to the governor's reduction. And they told me that all of America is watching Minnesota and what they do on this particular program, and the whole country is excited about it. And, of course, that call came to me the morning of the day that the governor gave his budget presentation. So they're looking at this, and then if you look at what our rankings are, we dropped from first or second to fourth in the United Healthcare state rankings, and the primary reason we dropped was because of lack of spending on public health activities and because of the increase in obesity in this state. And lastly, this program fits in very well with what big corporations are doing with their employees. General Mills, probably the leader in the country in terms of urging their employees to have healthy behaviors. So this program here was designed to fit right in with what the big corporations are doing to try to make their employees more healthy. So it's not just the liberals that are pushing this program. It's some very sophisticated and pragmatic business people understand that public health activities like this make a difference to their bottom line.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the input from our friend Representative Huntley, who serves as the chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. I also appreciate the comments of Representative Stevenson. We do have a huge task before us. $5 billion is not a drop in the bucket. We are going to have to find places to cut and cut some more, and many of those cuts are going to be painful. What I'm hearing from folks back home is cut the waste, cut the waste, cut the waste. I would assume that those things that truly are waste would have been the things that were first on the governor's radar agenda of cuts. And I think what's important for the committees to do now is look at all of these cuts and accept the fact that the governor has done a good job of cutting the waste, and by identifying these areas in these cuts that, as Mr. Aikman has said, and as Mr. Representative Stevenson has said, we are cutting beyond the waste. We are now cutting, or the governor is proposing to cut things that actually are designed to provide savings in the long term, and that, as Representative Huntley has said, groups from across the political spectrum agree that these investments can cut costs in the long run if we have the investments up front. So I think it's very important for these committees to do this work, to analyze the cuts, make sure that we are cutting the waste first, but also identify where are areas that we may be putting ourselves in a position where we are forced to cut investments that will save in the long run. We have to know when we are doing that. We may end up having to do that in the end, but we want to know where it is and when it is.
Thank you. I think that's a helpful request to the department. So if you can help us see where we are actually losing savings, health savings, that would be helpful. And I'm imagining that you probably aren't going to tell us there's waste somewhere that you're cutting. Am I correct, or did you find some when you were looking around?
Madam Chair, I think we have excised all the waste out of the budget a long time ago, personally.
Well, thank you. Anyway, I think it's a very good point that Representative Morgan makes, and if you could just help us see that when it comes up, it would be good. Because I'm sure if there are some painful cuts and they are causing loss of savings, that would be really important for us to know. Okay, why don't you go ahead.
Madam Chair, the next committee members, the next item is a grant shift on page C-15. So the department provides a grant to local public health agencies to administer their operations. We have a very important partnership between the state health department and local health departments to implement public health activities around the state and provide funding to accomplish those tasks at a local level rather than at a state level. Currently, the amount of money that we provide to local public health is divided up by a formula which I don't have in front of me, but we provide that payment in 12 monthly payments. Instead, this proposal, the governor recommends changing the local public health grant monthly payment schedule to a quarterly payment, and then delaying the last quarter of the next biennium to the following biennium, the first quarter of the following biennium. This will result in a one-time general fund savings of $5.193 million and one-time costs in fiscal year 11 and one-time costs in fiscal year 12. There would be actually no reduction to the yearly payment that any local public health agency would receive. They would just need to cash flow that delay through their current budget.
Jake, I'm just wondering, have you heard, since the budget's been out, of any concerns from local health folks, and maybe the legislators have, but I'm just wondering if you might have.
Madam Chair, we met with the Local Public Health Association and shared the governor's budget recommendation regarding this matter, and they didn't have any concerns.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just a comment that this is simply a shift. It doesn't really accomplish anything long term. It's just a shift of when you pay, so that it looks like the budget is balanced temporarily. Do you anticipate that this deficit is short-lived?
Madam Chair, Representative, I am certainly not an economist, nor am I the representative of Minnesota Management and Budget. It is certainly our hope, as it is the hope of probably all finance people across the state, that the deficit portended in fiscal years 10 and 11 recovers, the economy recovers, in fiscal years 12 and 13. But I can't say one way or another.
Okay. Well, Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to that point, I'm not going to get vicious on this issue, but I guess the governor's come out with his plan, and we're looking for leadership on another plan here. You know, let's look for some alternatives. We as a minority serve here, and we in the past have offered minority reports, but currently we have nothing to take a stab at. And if there are shifts going on, I would acknowledge the fact that we're not for shifts either. But the bottom line is, there are cuts that are going to have to be made. There's a budget that has to be balanced, and when we look out in the next biennium, not just this biennium, but the out years, so we aren't dealing with this again, let's get all the plans on the table and be able to make some educated choices. So I understand, Representative Lane, when you're talking about shifts, nobody wants to see shifts, and we're not able to see out that far. But the bottom line is, we are sent here to be responsible legislators to balance the budget and try and make this an economy that works for the people of Minnesota. And that means all plans at the table. And so I would encourage right now the majority party in the House to come up with a plan so that we as a minority party have options on the table to say, okay, we don't like the governor's plan, but we kind of like your plan. Or we don't like your plan, we like the governor's plan. But give us a plan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Stevenson, I think we'll look forward to your plan, too, so hopefully we'll have
Well, Madam Chair, to that point,
several to look at.
Yep, to that point, the last biennium we had plans, but they didn't get looked at. So, I mean, we're here to do what we can to facilitate this process, but we would ask, you know, as a leadership party, that you do what is supposed to be done by leadership parties, and that's to present a plan so that we can take a look at it.
I'm sure that this committee will be doing our part to do that, you bet. And I think one of the things that's going to happen is we're going to get some more input from the public. And so continuing on that line, maybe you can keep telling us what the other changes are so we can make sure we talk to our constituents about them.
Certainly. Madam Chair, committee members, the next item, C-16, is a grant reduction to our Family Planning Special Projects Program. The governor is recommending a $1.05 million reduction in fiscal years 10 and 11 to the base funding for this program. The rationale for this is that approximately, I believe, 3 years ago, the Department of Human Services implemented a waiver for the state Medicaid program, for the medical assistance waiver, which allows some of that federal
Medicaid money to be used for family planning services for women across the state whose incomes are 200% of federal poverty level. And through that program, we have reached 34,000 individuals in 2008 and expect 39,000 individuals to participate in that program by 2011. While this is a reduction in the Department of Health's efforts, we feel that the overall capacity of family planning services in the state of Minnesota will be unaffected by this reduction in light of that waiver.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and Mr. Akam, is there a loss of federal money and match on this as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, there is not currently a federal match to this money.
Well, again, Madam Chair, this is another program that saves the state money. For every dollar we spend on family planning, it saves us $4 or $5 in state share of medical assistance payments. So, again, and I agree with the Representative Severson, there's certainly going to be a lot of cuts on everything. But we're going to have to make our choices on which ones we cut. This one, like the last one, will save us money.
Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, Committee on C-17 is the next governor's recommendation. The governor recommends a 7.5% reduction to the Department of Health General Fund Administrative Budget. As you recall from the previous slide presentation, about two-thirds of the money for general fund purposes of the department goes out the door in grants. The remaining one-third is kept behind to administer the department's programs. That is considered our administrative budget. The governor is recommending a 7.5% reduction to that, which amounts to $1.834 million per year.
Is there anything you can tell us about what kind of, I guess, layoffs will be happening? Are we talking about layoffs here, and what kinds of personnel are we talking about for the health department?
Madam Chair, we currently do not have a plan for how we would implement this reduction in the department, but layoffs are certainly a possibility.
A possibility, not a for sure strategy?
Madam Chair, there's a lot of factors in play, including an economic stimulus package, a February forecast. The final amount of the administrative reduction is decided by the legislature at the end of session. Mm-hmm. At this point, it would be premature for us to say that it does or does not include layoffs.
Okay.
Alderman
Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, as a freshman, I might have just asked a stupid question, but how are the rents negotiated, the rent amounts? Who negotiates those?
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, the rent is negotiated on behalf of all state agencies, but as the Department of Administration. And so we work through them and their real estate unit to negotiate those rents. Some rent is in government-owned buildings, like our current headquarters in the Freeman Building, just down the square. That is owned by another state agency, was built by the Port Authority, and the state has an obligation to pay back the bonds that was used to construct that building.
Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, committee members, the next item is on page C-18. There's three technical adjustments that the governor is recommending to fix session law problems from the last two sessions. The first one involves Representative Huntley's committee. The second one is a discrepancy in our lead abatement grant program. Not to be too technical, in 2007, funding was allocated for that activity. This is a grant program to a nonprofit here in Minnesota to work with young people to do lead abatement work across Minnesota. For technical reasons, the money was appropriated not equally in the two fiscal years, $551,000 in the first year and $225,000 in the second year, we were able to roll forward the money to initiate grants in equal amounts for the 2 years. But because the second year was a lower amount, it affected our base budget packaging. Basically, we are short $163,000 a year for this grant program to meet the statutory language to spend $388,000 per year. And the second item is our emergency response and preparedness. We also received $100,000 of funding in 2007, but $0 in 2008. Session tracking showed a $100,000 base appropriation for this activity, ongoing beyond that. The spreadsheet, however, does not accompany that. This fix would restore the legislative intent to restore that funding back into the language. Madam Chair, committee members, the next two items actually relate to the new Clean Water Fund that was established as part of the constitutional amendment passed by voters this last fall. As the committee is aware, money from an increased sales tax was dedicated to the purposes of the arts, fish and wildlife, parks, and clean water. The clean water portion, some of that was set aside for the purposes of drinking water protection, which is one of the activities taken on by the Department of Health. We have two, the governor is proposing two proposals for that funding related to drinking water protection. And I'm curious, Madam Chair, if I should present those to this committee or if those will go to another committee elsewhere now.
That time once again.
Okay. Madam Chair, committee members, the first is for drinking water contaminants, and actually I'll present them together, and the second is for source water protection. Basically, the governor is proposing, recommending that the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment funding be appropriated to assess and address public health concerns related to contaminants found in Minnesota drinking water, for which no health-based drinking water standard is available. As the committee is aware, we've had a number of these issues pop up in drinking water discussions around the state, most notably in the PFC discussion that affected communities here in the metro area. The Department of Health doesn't have health-based drinking water standards for these items. We've often had to take a defense or a reactive posture when these new contaminants have become known. This funding will allow us to do more research to look for those contaminants in advance and to be better prepared to talk about the public health threats associated with new contaminants that we find in drinking water, which we haven't been done, which we haven't been able to do before. In other words, to take a more proactive stance to drinking water protection. And the second item, source water protection. This is an activity that we currently do with federal funds. The governor is recommending that Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment funding be appropriated to strengthen the protection of drinking water sources by enhancing our current source water characterization, accelerating the development of source water protection plans, improving data sharing, and enhancing technical assistance. The governor is recommending $805,000 in fiscal year 10 and $1.6 million in fiscal year 11 for the purposes of doing accelerated source water protection work at the Department of Health.
I have a question for you. We have had bills go through this committee that deal with these contaminants, of course, and have asked the department to do some work on it. So it looks like the source of funding is from the constitutional amendment. But the issues are certainly ones that this committee cares about. So one of the issues that came up several times in the last couple of years are for those contaminants that you are developing some sort of health risk standard, there's been a concern that there be a look at how it might be particularly set for children and young people, prenatally and infants as compared to adults. And I'm just wondering if you're making any headway on that, because there's been some parts of the department that have questioned if that that's necessary and other parts that have...
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that, but with me today is John Linkstein. He's the director of our environmental health division.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Stein, Director of Environmental Health with the Minnesota Department of Health. The answer to your question, Madam Chair, is yes. We have recently proposed rules for groundwater health risk limits that includes additional life stages and exposure concerns related to developmental effects and higher intake rates for water as children are developing in the womb and after birth. So our proposed rule, which is currently awaiting signature in the governor's office, does include expanded protection for children's health.
That's great. It seems like progress, huh?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions about this? One of the other committees I've been on, we have been talking about the impact of endocrine disrupting chemicals passes on children. Is that something that you're looking at too when you look at these, and is that part of the rule?
Madam Chair, that is in fact one of the items we would like to address. One of the challenges our current legislation that gives us authority to do this work is under the Groundwater Protection Act. Many of the endocrine disrupting compounds that are of emerging concern are actually found in surface waters. So we may need to have a slight adjustment of statutory language to authorize us to apply to drinking water sources rather than just groundwater. So, but yes, one of the issues we do want to address in this work is to look at endocrine disrupting compounds.
Is there going to be a proposal to bring forth that legislation? Are you going to work, yeah?
Madam Chair, yes, we plan to work through that issue once the necessary language for statutory changes is ready.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this would be probably for Mr. Stein. I'm just wondering, maybe for either one of you, but you can give this information to me later because it might take more time, but I would like to know what exact measures that your department is taking to work with the PCA, for instance, in looking at groundwater contamination, because there's certainly quite a bit of carryover, potential for duplication. I would like to know what the two agencies are doing when you're both dealing with drinking water so that there isn't duplication. Thank you.
We actually have time. So,
Madam Chair, if I can just briefly respond, Representative Taylor. The department does cooperate with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency when there's a contaminated site. We actually received some funding from the Remediation Fund to assist in our investigation of exposures. Primarily, we're looking at risks to public health that may be present, for example, at a old Superfund site or some other leaking landfill, something of that nature. Our staff then work directly with the Pollution Control Agency staff, so there's a team effort, so we don't actually work separate from each other. We're actually working side by side, and the work is divvied out by the agencies in cooperation. We then issue what's called health-based advice, and then the Pollution Control Agency can use that advice in making drinking water protection decisions about anyone that may be exposed either by private wells, consuming water from private wells, or in community water systems. So there's a very coordinated approach. We do have an interagency memorandum of agreement that we can forward a copy to you, and it explains all that. So we'll follow up with you additionally. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, the governor's final recommendations as it relates to the Department of Health budget have to do with our fee program, and I'll walk through those as quickly as possible. We have a number of them. On C-24, you can see that the governor is recommending the following changes to our well program to address the current budget shortfall and to ensure a minimum level operating level of the state well program. The governor is proposing removing the current government exemption from the well program fees, creating a reduced fee for government-owned monitoring well maintenance permits, and creating a graduated fee structure for larger groundwater thermal heat exchange systems. This will create an additional $325,000 per year in revenue, which will not change the amount of money that we are spending, but addresses a current deficit in the program.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, On the next page, on C26, the governor is recommending a change in our swimming pool inspection and plan review program. The governor recommends an adjustment to the public swimming pool licensing and plan review fees to reflect the cost of service and to maintain staffing levels needed to perform legislatively mandated requirements. As the committee probably remembers, last session there was passage here at the state legislature of the Abigail Taylor law, which requires oversight, additional oversight, and retrofitting of existing community pools. Coupled with federal legislation along those same lines, our costs in overseeing the program were estimates of the time. This reflects the additional cost of operating that program.
I'm just looking on C25. There seems to be a little editorial comment about the current budget shortfall being caused by the housing market collapse. Is that something your department wants us to know about in terms of the wells? And seems a little.
Madam Chair, the number of wells constructed is directly associated with new home construction, remodeling, and expansion. So when the housing market drops precipitously as it has, the well construction activity drops precipitously as well. Typical year, 12,000 wells are constructed in the state. We're down to about 6,500 a year right now.
So it is related.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other comments? Please go ahead, then. Oh, Representative Blind. Oh, let's get Representative Blind and Representative Stevens.
I just had a question about kind of a follow-up of a situation in my own district. The community of Webster did have some difficulty with wells and water, and I just wondered if you could give me a report back on where things are with that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Bly, I can follow up with you separately on that, but it is it's a little bit of a long story because Webster's water supply was contaminated, and the replacement well that was constructed at state cost turned out to be contaminated as well.
Correct.
So there's it's a fairly long and arduous process of now looking for an available supply at reasonable cost or treatment to address. So we will set up a meeting. Come tell you that story, where we're at on that.
Yeah. So they're still waiting for a solution?
That's my understanding. It's
I know those people are very anxious for
high levels of sulfate, so they have a pretty smelly water supply right now.
Thank you.
And the source of that contamination?
Oh, it was industrial contamination of groundwater.
Industrial, what type of industry?
I'm not sure what the actual source was, Madam Chair.
Well, the initial problem was a fuel company or something that went out of business, and there was some leaching of the contaminant into the wells. There were several wells that did not notice any contamination, but there was fear on the part of your department and that it might spread, so those wells were blocked off. And then when the new wells were dug, I don't know if anyone knows what the source of the contamination is there.
Madam Chair, Representative Bly, we believe it may be natural. It might just be naturally occurring sulfate levels. So you have a hydrogen sulfide problem. It's rotten egg smell. It's not an acute or even chronic health risk.
But it does affect their property value.
It certainly affects the water supply of that community. Yeah.
Representative Saylor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Sine, also, when you provide the other information to me, I would like to know exactly what role the Department of Health is going to be having with the groundwater, with the new graduated fee schedule. You know, what is it that you will be doing that is different than what somebody else, you know, another department does with regard to groundwater heat pumps?
Yes, Madam Chair, we'll be happy to provide that.
Okay. Anything else?
Madam Chair. The governor's next recommendation is on page C28, the Food Manager Certification Program. The governor recommends adjusting the Food Manager Certification fees and appropriation level to reflect the cost of overseeing the service.
And these will be affecting folks who are in which type of business are we talking about, in restaurants and so on?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Food manager certification is a certificate that you obtain after successfully completing a training course that addresses foodborne illness risks and food handling procedures to avoid those risks. And so we have a goal of having 100% of all restaurant facilities that are licensed by the state having a licensed food manager on staff. We're currently at about 85%, and we'd like to see that go up to 100%. That's part of a best practice procedure, and many restaurants require that of their management staff so that they can best assure food safety.
Madam Chair, committee members, the next proposal is on C-29, the Food, Beverage, and Lodging Program. The governor is recommending fee and appropriation adjustments for food, beverage, and lodging establishment activities related to licensing, inspection, and plan review. These adjustments reflect the cost of service, adjustments to staffing levels, and the restructuring of programs needed to perform our legislatively mandated requirements.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I am concerned about this on top of the county fees that are already by the county health departments. They already have additional fees. What's that going to mean to some of these small businesses?
Madam Chair, Representative McFarland, nothing. Local fees that are charged are actually operated under a delegated authority from the Commissioner of Health. So when a restaurant facility is established or modified, or updated, and fees are required to fulfill local health department requirements, those are because of a delegated food, beverage, and lodging agreement with the state. So we do not charge a fee in that circumstance. The fees charged then are determined by the local unit of government, and they go back to the local unit of government to operate that program.
I guess I'm going back to my volunteer days when I ran at one of our community festivals, and everybody who came to be a vendor had to pay a fee to Ramsey County for their license to serve food. So there is a fee, and here it says zero. I guess I'm wondering, is this going to be an addition then for them to what they are already paying?
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Farland, are you talking about the food manager certification
fee? I'm talking about the fees for the actual vendors. Maybe I'm on the wrong page on C-29.
I see. Madam Chair, and Representative McFarland, there would not be an additional fee on top of a local fee for the operation unless it's to have the food manager certificate. It is a local fee, and all the fees for temporary food stands, for mobile food units, for special events then are collected by the local program.
No. Madam Chair, committee members, the next recommendation the governor has related to our budget is on page C-31, youth camp licensure and inspection program. The governor recommends creating a youth camp licensing fee, which does not currently exist, and is and appropriating funds to cover the cost of inspection of youth camp. There's approximately 100 youth camps in the state. The Department of Health has responsibility for oversight of those facilities. This is currently an unfunded mandate. We are proposing to establish a $500 per year inspection and license fee for those facilities.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, the next recommendation is on page C-32, related to manufactured home park oversight and recreational camping. The governor is recommending creating statutory language for operating standards for special event camping areas, a license fee category for those short-term camping areas,
an adjustment to the fees and appropriations for year-round camping areas and oversight of manufactured home parks.
When you say oversight of manufactured home parks, what are we talking about?
Madam Chair, oversight means we inspect manufactured home parks and assure sanitation, proper compliance with the statute and rule concerning water supply, sanitation, spacing of the units, overall functioning of the any public health concerns associated with the facility. So that is basically our inspection process.
Does it include storm shelters?
Madam Chair, yes, it does.
How are we doing on that, by the way?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question on the on who pays the fees for the manufactured housing parks. Are those the owners of the park or the individual owners of the units?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the fee is actually collected from the owner of the park. I would also note that most parks charge a rental fee for services that they're required to pay for, including trash handling, street maintenance, so forth. So the residents, in all likelihood, contribute to the payment of these fees.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Madam Chair, Committee, the next recommendation the governor has is on page C-34, our X-ray program. The governor recommends increasing the appropriations and fees for the X-ray licensing and inspection program to ensure compliance with statutory requirements to inspect all X-ray facilities every 4 years, which we are currently unable to do at our current level of effort. Develop an electronic data system and electronic business transactions and recover the cost of the program.
Does this inspection go beyond X-ray? Is it all types of
Madam Chair, this is purely associated with the inspection of X-ray tubes at dental facilities, chiropractic facilities, and medical facilities. We have other programs that we're under contract with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for inspection of mammography equipment, as well as we operate a program for radioactive materials licensing for any radioactive materials that are used in hospital, clinics, or other treatment settings, as well as other, that includes other sources, including nuclear power plants, et cetera.
Madam Chair, committee members, the next recommendation the governor has is on page C-36, lead program pre-renovation and renovation. The governor recommends that the department be given authority to develop rules to adjust fees for pre-renovation notification of lead hazards and the regulation of renovation, repair, and painting activities that impact lead-based paint in child-occupied facilities. These activities are currently mandated by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Development of this program will ultimately result in the department seeking approval to operate the program in lieu of the EPA. It's anticipated that this initiative will support lead reduction activities in housing and reduce unnecessary exposure of children. And just one more comment, Madam Chair. If you look further down the page under the proposal and the following page, C-37, you can see that the current state fees to operate this program, if we are given this authority, are substantially lower than the federal fees on the following page, which are charged by the Environmental Protection Agency. This proposal would actually save dollars here in Minnesota.
Just a couple questions. So the testing is pre-renovation, which right now is not happening?
Madam Chair, that's correct. The EPA just recently promulgated the rule that took effect late last year. So this establishes a new requirement
And what level of clearance are we talking about here for sampling?
Well, Madam Chair, I'll have to get back to you on that question. I'm not sure what the actual detailed requirements of the inspection are. We can follow up with you on that information.
Okay, and while you're at it, are you talking about within housing? Are you talking about the soil around housing? Those are some of the questions I'd be interested in knowing, too, since we know that soil is one of the big contributors to the child poisoning as well.
Madam Chair, my understanding is this is within the home, but we'll follow up with you on that as well.
Madam Chair, committee members, the next recommendation is on page C-38, relates to our infected health care worker program. The governor is recommending an increase in the appropriation of $50,000 for the infected health care worker monitoring program from the FGSR fund. This increase will ensure the state is able to effectively evaluate and monitor all health care workers who are infected with HIV, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C. This is an activity that we currently do. We have not changed the appropriation for this program in quite some time. We are seeing a small increase in the number of cases. Basically, we develop individual plans with infected healthcare workers to ensure that they do not pass their infection on to patients. This is paid for by a fee placed on doctors, nurses, dentists through the boards. However, we receive an appropriation from them to administer this program. This would be a small increase in that appropriation.
Okay.
Madam Chair and Mr. Aiken, maybe this is too detailed, but I mean, you got HIV and a couple of hepatitis, but not TB. Is there some reason? Because I can tell you that if there was a physician in Duluth that had TB that was in an active state, it should have been monitored. If you could just have somebody in your office.
Madam Chair, Representative Huntley, I'd have to get back to you about that.
So it is limited to just to these three at this point?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And the final government's recommendation is on page C-40, the environmental certification fee. The governor is recommending an appropriation of $150,000 in fiscal year 10 and 11 to support the continuation of the Minnesota's Environmental Lab Accreditation Program. The governor further recommends changing the fees from biannual to annual and increasing the fees to ensure the recovery of costs.
And no mistake, the cost here is of the people who are doing the accrediting. Is that the
that's cost? That's correct, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Has there been a problem that we need to go to yearly inspection or yearly accreditation? Are we solving a problem here?
No, Madam Chair. There's no problem with the current environmental lab accreditation program. It's just it's grown in size, and we have not increased the level of the fee in some time.
Okay. So but it's going to go to annual rather than biannual accreditation.
That's correct, Madam Chair, and that's actually at the request of the fee payers. It's easier for them to administer an annual fee rather than to budget for a biannual fee, since they operate on fiscal years as well.
Are they getting accredited annually then instead of biannually, or is it they're being inspected?
That's correct, Madam Chair. They're accredited on an annual basis. They only paid the fee previously on a biannual basis.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. We're just about out of time. Tomorrow we're going to hear from a lot of the folks who may have some concerns about these. We do have a few minutes. Representative Huntley?
Just a comment for leaving. I always call this the Duluth Room. And if you happen to walk up the new members, all those lithographs are about the city of Duluth, and they were built the last time we needed a stimulus package was in the 1930s, and that was the worst progress administration that paid the artists to do that.
Wow, thank you for that circle.
Madam Chair, that would now explain why this room is so cold.
That's what I thought you were going to say. You're right. All right, is everybody pretty chilly in here? Should we try to? Okay. Oh, I guess the staff has been trying to raise the heat. Well, maybe we get some lively conversation. I want to, yeah, we need the minutes to be approved from, the date is February 28th. I'm sorry, January 28th. Representative Morgan?
I'll move the minutes from January 28th, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. The minutes have been moved to be approved. Any questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and we are, the minutes are approved. Now, there's just a couple of quick things I want to tell you. Please leave your budget books, but staff advises us that this piece of paper under here can be pulled out, and you should probably put your name on it so that your little notes don't get taken by anybody else, okay? So just put your name right on this paper that it comes out here, okay? And then we'll make sure that you get yours back. The other thing I want to remind you is that we are having the housing, legislative housing caucus meeting again. This will be the first one, but the reminder is that it'll be tomorrow at 11:30, room 181 at the state capitol. 118 at the state capitol. There will be pizza and refreshments, and it's a chance to talk about, in an informal way, some of the issues that are critical to the housing issues. And there'll be, the senator is a bipartisan, bicameral meeting, so I want to encourage you all to come. And I think that's about it. Yeah, we will set the agenda there for some learning sessions that we're going to have after that, so I hope you consider coming, at least for a short while. I know some of you have other commitments. If you can come even for a little while, that'd be great. Any further discussion? If not, we're going to hear from our folks tomorrow. Excuse me?
And Madam Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. One last thing. Representative Howes had asked for some detail on our grant distribution. That is in the back of your budget books on page
C-84. C-84. Okay. Thank you. If not, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.